This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations. Recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Rayleigh Murphy,
Stuart Dirks,
and I am Don Esselmont. Right, Rayleigh, I'd like to talk about the late effects of polio. How old were you when you first fell ill with it?
When I had what?
When you first got polio.
I had polio at 7 years of age. And until about 20, I worked hard to get my muscles working and my body coping with parts of it that's paralysed permanently. But I think I did quite a good job, and I managed for many years. I was never able to work an 8-hour day, but I did all sorts of things other than. Worked in our own business. I was like the backup person. So that's what I did. I had 3 children, which was really quite taxing for my body, but I had a very good, supportive mother. Then I found an ad in the Manawatu Standard. If anyone is reading this and you've had polio and would be interested in meeting other polio people, would you like to reply? Well, I jumped at it because I came out of hospital. I didn't make friends with kids in hospital. I wanted to be normal. And, of course, by this stage, and I would have been it would have been 1980-something. About 1988. And so I replied, and I found they were talking about getting a society organised in New Zealand. So they were getting research in from America, and I found it all very interesting because I was trying to work out what had happened to my body and how I can counter it. But anyway, by being on the board, they were all of us working hard to try and get the medical profession to understand what we're saying. You can't go to someone and say, I feel this, because there's no way of gauging it. But I know most of us were feeling all sorts of things were happening to us, and we didn't have any proper name to it. I actually have kept myself functioning reasonably well by going to an osteopath, and I can't get much further than once every 3 weeks. And I still do that at this stage. But by staying on the board, I heard all sorts of things coming in from America. It was long before the internet, and they were talking about the late effects that was happening to people that had had polio. So I went up to Rotorua Hospital, and they had a educational thing there and tried to explain to us that we had grown these little new nodules on our existing nerves. They were there and they'd done a jolly good job, but they only had a short 30 to 40 year shelf life. So what was actually happening, they felt, was those little bits that had grown, which was a natural phenomenon, were dropping off, dying. And we were now going back to sort of how we were when we first had the infection.
So the polio was killing off the nerve endings?
No, the nerve endings had only a shelf life.
Yeah, but you were saying these nerve endings were growing?
No, the nerves that were existing after the polio killed a lot of them, the nerves that were still existent, they grew the nodules, the little new. And of course, that's why we were feeling, gosh, we're losing ground. What's happening here? Then we've had different people looking at us and thinking about it, and really they're now saying where we're going to go back to was how we were after the initial illness, which is pretty scary because a lot of us were very almost bedridden. In fact, I've got a friend in Wanganui that's she's got to have some help doing everything, absolutely everything, and has lived alone all their life. But at this stage, I stayed on the board mainly to get information, but doctors were not helpful because they'd never seen a polio person. And because we all got on with life.
Oh, of course, because this is what it's sort of 40 years after the polio, so most of the doctors would have retired, those who worked at the
time.
That's right.
And another friend, he went to the doctor and he had something catching up with him. And he said, would it be because I had polio? And he goes, oh, no, you wouldn't have had polio. All of those died. That was move. And he said, well, I had polio. I know I did. My mother told me. Some of the children that were very little didn't know much about it. I can't remember that much. But all I remember is I was fretting to go home. Obviously very, very frightened of what was going on. Anyway, I stayed on the board for quite a long while, but we were battering our head against a brick wall with the health board. And we all knew that because of the population ageing, we were going to be taken off the invalid benefit and put onto the old age benefit. Well, we're going to be in line to get any help whatsoever. And that's when the Duncan family decided to come back on board.
Oh. Now, so could you say something about the Duncan family? Because they've been very involved in...
Yes. The Duncan family had a farm at Hunterville. And they had a spare house in Wanganui, where I think one of the Duncan sisters or someone lived. And when she died, they set that up as a rehabilitation hospital for polio people. I know a lot of people went there, and they'd go there, they'd get checked over. A lot of them had surgery at the Wanganui Hospital and went back to the Duncan home up there for rehabilitation. And some of them were there for a very long time. And that once they were up and running again and managing to cope, some of them even went back every couple of years. The Duncan people were using the Sister Kenny treatment, which was hot packs and massage. And I had that actually in the health system, but the Duncan family got someone over from, I think it was Australia, and to teach the staff up there just what to do with these polio children to try and activate their muscles and things again.
How was this centre funded?
Oh, the Duncan family had a farm, and so anyone that went there didn't have to pay. And the Duncan family were they paid for everything. And from their farm, they were fed milk, meat, all sorts of things. So anyone that went to the Duncan home didn't have to pay. Actually, and it's not the family that are there now, it's the ones before them. That's Sir Thomas Duncan, I think it was. I've got maybe have the name wrong, but they've always taken care of people like the polio people. Once they were all up and running, so to speak, they then took on people that needed help but was not available in the ordinary system. And so that's what they had done. Now, about 5 years ago, they have come back on board and realised that polio people are now hitting another brick wall, the late effects of the polio. For me, I think it's it's the meanest cut of all. When we were young, parents had to make decisions. What's going to happen and how are you going to manage? Once you've been all your life managing and in control, all of a sudden everything's cut away from underneath you. You've got no say in anything. And by going to a doctor, they don't understand. The only people that would really know much about it are an Indian doctor coming from overseas. And there's not too many of those. I did see a young Indian doctor at one of the meetings I went to, and I've forgotten his name now, but I said to him, do you know anything about polio? And he goes, no, I don't, I'm sorry. But he said, I know about post-polio. So that's, he's aware that that's happening. But, I think for all of us, we're all very different. Really what's happening, all of our muscles are going floppy. And that's natural aging as well. That's why quite often the doctor will say, oh, just normal, just normal. We know it's not normal. It's going too fast. So at this stage, I'm not sure what we can do. For me, I have to manage myself. I can encourage anyone else to look at this and look at that. But it's for each of us to manage ourselves the best we can. There's no easy way around it. But as I say, I think it's mean. Even now, my family, I don't say they don't believe me, but they can't imagine it. Oh, Mum, I know you could do this. I know that. But they haven't seen me for a couple of years. And they ring up and I'm always in touch with them. I sound bright. No, I've had a good day. So that's not telling them anything about really where I'm at. So I've been quite lucky. I've had an occupational therapist, unfortunately, that's left now. But she was very good. Anything I needed, even if I couldn't have something new, she'd give me something that's come that was going to be turfed out somewhere. And I was really happy with that, like a bed board or, you know, any of those things. There's a lot of things that we need, but not all of my friends are as lucky as I am. Some of them haven't got an OT that gives a hoot.
An OT?
Occupational therapist. And I've got one now after my one left, and he means well, but there's only three of them in the Palmerston North Hospital, and they need another two at least. So when it's come to me jacking up my wheelchair with the mechanic, he just said to me, you deal with him. So I've got the okay to go to the mechanic as I want, which is good. But I feel sorry for him. At first I was really annoyed with him, as I thought, oh, he doesn't, but he's run off his feet. He doesn't know where to start. And of course the woman that I had before, she'd been my occupational therapist for a very long time. She knew me very well. And if I said I really needed something, she'd say, why? And I'd explain it to her. I most likely can enunciate well enough for them to know what I'm talking about, and they trust me. But not all of my friends are in that same boat. So at this stage, I have been a contact person for the polio people in this area. We used to travel, as a group of us, we'd go to Whanganui and meet up with some of them over there, and we'd have a lunch somewhere. That is no longer able to be done. We're all getting a bit harder to get. But I call a meeting about once every 3 months at a cafe here in Fielding, and we like it because it's automatic opening doors. So, of course, what with walkers and wheelchairs, we can just get in like that. And they've got a conference room where we don't have to shout to be heard, and it's really good. And I said to them last time when we had 15 people from Palmerston mainly and Tokomaru, Beaconsfield and Fielding, and that's not all of the Fielding people.
Now you're saying that post-polio is becoming an issue now as
yep.
polio survivors are
yep.
living. Would you have any idea in New Zealand about how many people are potentially subject to this?
I don't know the numbers, but the Polio Society would have a rough idea. That's what they're trying to do. A lot of people don't want to know about it.
Yeah.
And as far as numbers are concerned, Stuart, we had a meeting in Palmerston North quite a few years ago now, because we had a physio over from Perth who had worked on polio patients before. And she was coming over, so we had a meeting at the RSA when it was still open. And you want, yep. And so we had that meeting there, and we had someone from Napier, Masterton, Whanganui. They all came in, lots of from Palmerston North and Woodville. And so at that meeting, we took the name of all those people that attended. And there was a lot of them I didn't know. Oh, and Levin came up too. And anyway, after I got home, I went through and I rang them all, because we got their name and their phone number. And I rang them all. I wouldn't push anyone, but I would ring them to say, did you find the meeting helpful? Did you get anything that you out of it? And would you like to be contacted when we have a meeting? Well, it was a very interesting time, because some of them are still quite able. They're not too bad. Oh, no, I still ride a bike everywhere. I'm fine. No, and all of a sudden, I'm busy with my grandchildren. And I'd say, look, that's lovely. That's really, really good. If you find you want to have a talk about it, you can get in touch with me through the Citizen Fives. And then I would just leave it, because some of them, I mean, there was one lady said to me when she got to the meeting, she nearly flipped when she saw how many people were in wheelchairs and walkers and on sticks, because she doesn't need them yet. And it is scary.
Were many people, were people who had polio, were they all seriously affected, or were there some very mild cases? So they didn't seem to have much long-term impact?
Mm-hmm.
And are they suffering from post-polio?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I was up at Rotorua quite a while ago now, we were going into a room to have our lecture on learning about it. And then with this young fellow, very slight, didn't even have a limp. And he was going through the doorway, and I thought, what's he here for? Very rudely to myself. And anyway, when he got in there, I thought he must have been in the wrong place. When he got in there, and the lecturer was talking, he spoke up and he said he's in excruciating pain all the time. Now, he looked fine. His pain was coming because his muscles inside were all shrinking back. And, of course, it's every part of his body. And I thought, man alive, how judgmental I was. And we've got a member in Woodville. She's pulled back a wee bit at the minute, but she does look as though things are wrong with her. And she has excruciating pain. So I don't think she's losing so much power as things are coming on. And there's nothing you can do about it. Nothing at all.
So these are people who would have had polio, not had much in the way of effects, so they look sort of normal, but this is happening to their bodies now.
Yep, yep, okay. Yep. And of course, too, for the fellow that's all straight and was full of pain and rosacea, you go to the doctor and he just said, you've just got to put up with it. The doctors don't think it's anything to do with the polio. Rotorua has got a good learning process, teaching us about ourselves. And we really have to be our own monitors, to be quite honest. Yeah, and, I mean, I went and did several courses, like, to find out what was wrong, what had happened. I didn't know whether it was my bones. I didn't know whether it was my muscles. What do you do? So for a long time, I was under a chiropractor because of that. And he kept me functioning for a while, but I'm happier now with what I'm doing. But it's certainly getting very hard to get into her rooms, because I've got to get my walker out of the car and then into her rooms. So I don't.
Oh, and so although it's her occupation, it doesn't. She doesn't have the accessibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's why if I want to go somewhere, I've got to make sure that something wherever it is, it's accessible. That's why I go to the certain meetings that I go to, the ones that are accessible. There's several I'd love to go to. And I said to Graham Slater the other week, I think I have to pull out of coming to the movies. And he goes, oh, no, why? And I said, well, by the time I get my walker out of the car, walk in there, up the step and into the seat, sit for 2 hours and then get up and walk out again. I said, it's too sore. And he said, well, how could you use? Have you got a chair? And I said, yes. So he knows I've got a chair because he's seen me at the seminars. And he said, well, all we need to do is get you a ramp. And I thought, oh, yeah. But I said, I feel awful intruding into Eric's place with a ramp. And he said, no, Eric won't mind. So next thing, he gets the men's shed in Palmerston to make it a ramp so that I can get up and into there. So, you know, people are very kind. I hate making a fuss. I just don't like to be noticed if I can. But no, so I've only been once to the movies with up my ramp. And
you've got to go now they've made it.
I know. And the first day Graham was back, it was blowing a gale. And I thought, this is the very day I don't like going out because of the back door. It swings, it's got a air lift on it. And so you have to really slam it hard to get the door shut. And so I thought, I'll have to go in this goddamn awful weather because Graham's done that for me. So I got up there. And poor bloke, he was holding my door while I get in the car. Cause, I mean, I could have just got bashed up by the wind. It was awful, but I did go, and the ramp was just a little short, so he's taken it away to make it a little bit longer. Yeah. So, no, I'm very lucky. People are very kind.
So obviously you know a lot of people who had polio or in post-polio and so on. How about the families of those people? How has it affected them?
Well, it affected them a lot because I can't say about any one family, but I said to my brother one day, he was the only one at home. He was two and a half years younger than me. And I said, I'd been reading something, and they said, when children went into hospital when I was in, look, don't worry about them. They're children. They'll get over it. Well, they don't. It leaves a lot of damage there, you know. And I said to my brother, you know, it was really, really damaging for us being away from family. And he goes, oh, do you think you're the only one that got damaged? And I go, no, I wasn't saying that. And he said, how do you think I felt? My big sister went away and I didn't know whether she was ever going to come back again. And mum and dad didn't tell me anything that was going on. Because while I was in hospital isolated, so were they in the home. And the family weren't allowed out. They couldn't mix with any of their friends. And the policeman used to come and take mum's grocery list to the shop.
Oh, is this the time when the schools were closed or something like that?
And the policeman would do all the shopping, put the groceries over the fence, and that's how they did. And so, yes, everything was isolated. No picture theatres.
It was before television in New Zealand.
So it was, someone wrote a book about her father-in-law had polio, and I can't find it at the moment, but she presented it at one of the conferences, and she was reading from her book, and we were all sitting there, and then as she was reading it, the number of us are sitting in the audience, tears streaming down her face. And it's like reading that. It's just...
When you say reading that, that's the book Over My Dead Body by June Opie. And who is June Opie?
June Opie was a polio person. She was trapped. She went to England for her big OE. She was in her 20s. And she got over there, and that's when she got sick. And she was sort of in digs, and then she got sick, and they put her into hospital, and she didn't want to go into hospital because she didn't have any family. And that's what I was reading, and it was very distressing. But I found it very interesting because she's putting into words what I was feeling that I hadn't really thought about. Mm. I knew I was frightened. She was saying she's terrified. Mm. You don't know whether it's going to go away. You don't shut your eyes in case you don't wake up in the morning.
Yeah. Mm. Now, there's the issue of iron lung as well, isn't there? Was that something that affected you?
I didn't need an iron lung, but she did.
Mm.
And different ones were put in the iron lung.
And the iron lung's like a big box where your head's sticking out one end. And what does it do?
It breathes for you.
Okay, so it changes the pressure around your chest to help you.
Because all your muscles are so weak, you can't. And before she got into the lung, they said to her, look, just sit, don't panic, just sit still. And you don't want to run out of breath before they get her into the lung.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long would they spend in a lung, in an iron lung?
They're taken out for a wee while after a few days.
Oh, so they're in there non-stop?
Yeah.
So what about bodily functions and things like that?
Don't know. But there was a man in Palmerston North that lived to be 59. His whole life was in an iron lung. So it must be possible. But there's another man in Whanganui that Merv knows, and he said all he can remember is the pumping of the lung. And I don't know how old Ian was when he was in hospital, but those are sounds you never forget.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.